I have something to show you, since we are on camera. This I hold before you is a ballpoint pen. It is not any ordinary ballpoint pen. This is a space pen. This pen traces its history back to the 1960s, when the space race was going on between the United States and Russia at the time. And astronauts, cosmonauts, were finding their way into outer space. And they needed some reliable writing instruments. They had to record their data. After all, they are doing scientific experiments out there in outer space, and they needed something to write with. The ballpoint pen that you might be holding in your hand has a problem with it when you're in outer space. There is no gravity out there, and the ballpoint pens that we normally use require gravity to pull the ink down through the ink shaft onto the paper that you're writing on. And that simply doesn't work in outer space. It's similar to writing with a ballpoint pen upside down or on a wall, where you don't have that advantage of gravity pulling the ink down where it should be. This pen, however, this pen can write upside down. This pen can write underwater. It can write in extreme heat and extreme cold. It can write in outer space. And it looks pretty cool. It fits in a pocket, too, which is nice. Now, in the 1960s, this pen cost about $1 million for the research and development. That money was spent so that astronauts could simply write in outer space. It was a very big victory, and because, as you might imagine, to get ink to flow through the ink shaft onto a piece of paper, it needs to be available when you want it, but not when you don't. You don't want ink squirting out all over the place. So that was a particular challenge that was solved. It was a big deal, and it took $1 million to do it. You know, the funny thing is, this was an American invention, and it was used first by the Americans. But do you know what the Russians used when they were in outer space to write with? A pencil. You know, I like that story. But at its core, it's the punchline there is about not overthinking something, not overthinking a problem and being wasteful with the time and resources that you might have. But there's a problem with that punchline. You know what that is? That punchline doesn't tell the whole story. Pencils were actually used by the Americans, too. Pencils were used by the Russians and the Americans at about the same time. The problem with pencils is that they do write. You don't have to worry about gravity to write with a pencil. But there were some huge problems with pencils, bigger than the problem with a pen that doesn't write when there's no gravity. Pencils, especially mechanical ones that astronauts like to use, tend to have the lead break off. If you've ever used a mechanical pencil, you know that you write and then it snaps, you write and then it snaps, and you get all these little bits of lead dropping onto your paper. But in outer space, those little bits of lead, they start floating around everywhere. And that's a problem when you're in a tightly enclosed environment, you're floating around, and you get a piece of lead stuck in your eye or up your nose. I mean, that's a problem. You can't have serious eye injuries in outer space, but eye injuries are, you know, not the biggest problem. Pencil lead is made of graphite. Graphite has a property such that it is highly conductive. It lets electricity go from one spot to the next very well. And in outer space, in this tight, confined environment, where there are a lot of very expensive electrical equipment being tested and running, and in fact, very vital for the fact of running this high-tech equipment, you can't have little bits of graphite getting into circuits where they might cause a short circuit and damage equipment. That's a big deal. Pencils were a big problem, mechanical pencils in particular. And fire actually turns out to be an even bigger problem. You could imagine a short circuit happening, and when a short circuit happens, there may be an electrical spark, some kind of arc. And in outer space, they're living in this highly oxygenated environment, and fire can occur very, very quickly, rapidly. Pencils are like the worst writing instrument to use. In fact, the Russians figured that out too, and you know what they wrote with? Grease pencils. Have you ever tried to write with a grease pencil? It's like writing with a crayon, only worse. It smudges, and in order to sharpen it, you have to unravel the paper, and you get bits of paper floating all over it. It's bad news. Ballpoint pen really was what they needed. It was developed. On top of that, this example is something that is classically cited as something that demonstrates the waste and excess of American innovation, right? That $1 million was not spent by the U.S. government. That $1 million to develop the space pen was spent by a private entrepreneur. He took it out of his pocket and did the research and development on his own. Spent his own money. And you know what he sold these pens to NASA for? About $6 a piece. $6. And you know what happened? They sold about, what was it, 400. They bought 400 pens. It's a lot, but they had a lot of people working for them, and they're kind of cool, right? And they were only $6. The Russians bought 100 with 1,000 refillable cartridges in only 2 years afterwards. Yes, this was a good innovation. And that story with the punchline that talks about oversimplicity and demonstrates waste doesn't tell the whole truth. The reason that I bring this story up today is to highlight the point that sometimes we might hear something that we want to hear, that we want to believe is true, and that is consistent with our common sense. But, brethren, that may prevent us from finding out the real truth that lies below the surface. It's helpful to have a bit of skepticism active in our thinking so that we don't fall prey to being naive. We really need to work and build our understanding of the truth, the real truth, not just part of the truth. Our minds need to be open to it. Our hearts need to be hungry for the truth. We must have the mind of God to help us understand that truth. Let's go and turn over to Matthew 13, and I'd like to read the parable of the sower. The parable of the sower brings a lot of these facts, these principles to mind. The parable of the sower is in Matthew 13, and it starts in verse 3. Then he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, Behold, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. Some fell on stony places where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. Some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. But others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. If we don't have solid ground, if we don't openly let the seed that falls upon our ground, if we don't let that take root in a deep kind of way, it will not last. That stony ground is hardened. That represents the hardened way of thinking, such that the truth is not allowed to sink in. Stone is unwilling to be penetrated. Stone does not bend. Stone is not soft and malleable and pliable. If our understanding and our current beliefs are hardened so much to the point where we are unwilling to learn and challenge the beliefs of common sense and challenge the worldly understanding that we might have, then we have stony ground. In that environment, where the depth of understanding is very shallow, the truth has no chance of taking root and growing within us and developing in the way that it needs to. We may hear things that sound good initially. We may hear things that sound right. But the complete understanding of the truth may be lacking. And that's the first lesson of the parable of the sower. But if you continue on, there's a little bit more that comes out of this too. Matthew 13 and verse 10. And the disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And he answered and said to them, "Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him." Do you catch that part? And whoever has, more will be given. Whoever has the ability to understand the truth and has proven it, more truth, more understanding will be given. But if you do not have that ability to understand because your understanding has been hardened, it will be taken away. Just like how we heard in the parable of the sower, where that understanding, those seeds that sprouted up, were scorched. I'll continue on in verse 13. "Therefore, I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, 'Hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn so that I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it.'" Ironically, this explanation that of why Christ speaks in parables reinforces the point made by the parable itself. Parables teach the truth, but in a way that can only be understood by those who have an open heart and an open mind and are willing to understand the depth of the truth that's being taught. When you read the Bible, when you listen to the sermons preached on the Sabbaths, when you review the other material that we produce, the Q&As, the editorials, the current events, when you pray, is your mind open to receive the truth? Is your ground soft so that the truth might take root? Or has your understanding become hardened so that you are unwilling to increase the depth of what you currently understand? That's something we all need to ask, and I include myself in that too. Let's turn over to Romans 12 and read verse 2. Right. Romans 12 and verse 2. "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." We may live in this world, but we are not to be a part of it. We are not to conform to it. Our understanding needs to be not of this world, but we need to build the spiritual understanding of the truth of God. The carnal mind is enmity against God. And that is why we really need to put aside that hardened way of thinking, that carnal way of thinking, if we are to increase our understanding of God's truth. If we don't, let's turn over to Isaiah 30, and I'll read verses 9 through 11 there. If we are unwilling to listen to the truth of God, we wind up falling into this category. In Isaiah 30, verse 9, that this is a rebellious people, lying children, children who will not hear the law of the Lord, who say to the seers, do not see, and to the prophets, do not prophesy to us right things. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. Get out of the way. Turn aside from the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. This is a rejection of God. This is a rejection of the truth. And that is about that close from rejecting God's way of life, from rejecting the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, because that is part of God's truth. We cannot reject that. If we conform to this way of life, and if we say, get out of my way, I don't want to know the truth, I'm pretty happy with the carnal way of thinking, that is a big problem. We begin to find ourselves thinking, I don't want to hear the truth today. I'm just going to be satisfied living in the world. That needs to be a trigger for us to stop and turn around. That's a trigger to let us know that our hearts are hard and unwilling to accept the truth, unwilling to find the depth. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and I'll read verses 9 through 12. Second Thessalonians 2, beginning in verse 9. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. The love of the truth. Brethren, deception is a funny thing. Sometimes it is completely constructed with pieces of the actual truth. In the example of the space pen that I told you, every part of how I introduced that story to you was true. The Russians wrote with pencils. $1 million was spent to develop a pen that could write in space. And it left you with the impression that in its origin, it was a wasteful endeavor. All of the pieces of that were true. But the conclusion of that was not true. The only way that we will be able to guard ourselves against deception is if we have love for the truth. Love so much that it leads us to explore it in depth. That love of the truth must lead us to learn and to comprehend with the mind of God working within us to direct our understanding. The love of the truth is necessary for us to be saved from believing the lie.